Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
My grandma cried. Gave up the booze and late night boys. Shuffled off to church in its corduroys. Yeah, he shuffled off to church in his corduroys. Yeah, he shuffled off to church in his corduroys.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Amy Garland and Bonnie Montgomery? Y'all like Amy and Bonnie? Amy Garland and Bonnie Montgomery are two of Arkansas's most sought-after singer-songwriters and play solo, duets like tonight, and in various other projects. More can be found at ReverbNation.com. All right, well, welcome to a very special edition of Tales from the South, our annual love show where Southerners bring their own true love stories to life. We are on location at Best Impressions Restaurant in the Arkansas Arts Center in Little Rock, Arkansas. Tales from the South is presented by Temenos Publishing Company and the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops, and I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my right here playing for us tonight is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Among other things, Mark can be heard on blues legend John Weston's CDs, Got to Deal with the Blues and Blues at Daybreak. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? These Delta screen doors with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the American South collection and are for sale. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. Our listeners can find out more about these pieces and V.L. at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Tonight is our annual love show and all of the complications that come along with that word. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Later tonight, Jessica Horton is overcome when Cupid hits his mark, and we'll end the night with Kay Fisher in love and making mistakes. But let's start the night here at Tales from the South with Lisa Brandom as she learns the art of seduction in Sandra Dee.
It's a beautiful fall day in Little Rock, and we're enjoying brunch at Yaya's European Bistro with my family, celebrating my granddaughter. She sits to my right. Suddenly, the jazz quartet, who has been playing in the background the whole time, announced to the dining room that it's my granddaughter's 16th birthday, and they began singing a song to her about being 16. I lean over and remind her that I'm turning 70 on the next birthday celebration. But then I began to think about being 16 myself, which at this moment feels just like a brief day in time, just like a day or so back. I was living in a small Mississippi Delta town with my grandmother. The two of us would often sit on her little front porch of the tiny two-bedroom house we shared together. In the Deep South, porch sitting is one of the most common activities as the summer days begin to wane. A slight breeze would ruffle through the air. Gigantic sweet tea glasses would be brought out. The scent of magnolia blossoms was strong. And any neighbors passing by would sit for a few minutes to share the news of the day. Neighborhood boys would often ride by the house located at the corner of Columbus and Hobson on their motorbikes. Often they stopped to visit, at which point my grandmother would conveniently go into the house for a while. I liked wearing the long man's shirt that was popular in 1961 with my short, short white shorts. My legs were always long and tan, and I knew how to show them off. I always made sure I looked as much as possible like Sandra Dee before I went outside. It was a couple of years earlier that the film, A Summer Place, had become a Hollywood sensation for us young people. We were somehow very intrigued by the plot of young and steamy summer love. Sandra looked very pretty in the movie, with her brightly colored scarf wrapped around her blonde hair and her pouty lips covered with grape ice lipstick. One of the boys sat with me more frequently than the other one, and I rode with him throughout the town in his new little Austin Healey Sprite convertible. He was so much like me. He was being reared by a single mother, had two older sisters. He also had squinty eyes with sandy brown hair, like my other big hero, singer Bobby Darin. His body was lean and fit. As for me, I was being reared by my grandmother. My mother was working as a restaurant hostess in Memphis, and I had one older sister. I was also trying my best to be Sandra Dee. I bought all of the movie magazines like Photoplay and Silver Screen each month that either featured her on the cover or had a story about her and her romance with Bobby. My imitative ruse finally began to work one day when, on the front porch, the young man sitting by my side said, "This is going to sound funny, but right now with that scarf and that color lipstick, you remind me exactly of Sandra Dee." I knew it was now time to plan my next strategy. Perhaps a group of us teenagers could go to Enid Lake to the day soon and enjoy picnicking and swimming and sunbathing. Of course, my Bobby would be there. We all gathered together, built a bonfire, ate hot dogs, roasted marshmallows, and laughed like crazy. As a number of us splashed and romped on the beach, he and I finally went into the water together. It was underwater that he kissed me for the first time and the only time of our lives together. I liked it. I believe he liked it. But at that time, another young man, quarterback of the high school's football team, was interested in me as well, and I chose him to be my boyfriend for my senior year instead. When I graduated from high school the following May, I moved to Wichita to live with my mother and her new husband. I married my husband of the past 50 years after we dated 3 years. Several years after I got married, I came back to visit my grandmother. She told me that just the month before, my Bobby had come by to visit her one day, and he asked about me. She took my wedding picture down from the living room wall and showed it to him. He said he was sorry he had missed me. I was sorry that I had missed him as well. After all, I was his Sandra Dee, and he was my Bobby Darin. As the jazz quartet finishes up their song to my 16-year-old granddaughter, I looked down at my not-teenage hands anymore and then looked at hers. So much time ahead of her, so much behind me. And while I miss my short shorts, that underwater kiss, and my Bobby, I knew that it had all worked out exactly the way it was supposed to. After all, we were destined to be dream lovers only.
Lisa Brandom has been writing stories about growing up in the South for the past 35 years. Her published books include The Skagway Connection, Four Women, One Century, and her latest, Searching for Hen. She and her husband are enjoying their retirement in Little Rock. Next on Tales from the South, the fire of love threatens to overtake Jessica Horton in Inferno.
Stumbling out of my darkened apartment bathroom, bleary-eyed without my glasses and still toweling off my hair, I rushed past the opening to the living room and into my bedroom. I'd been climbing out of the shower when I heard the doorbell ring and the resultant cacophony that was my canine perimeter alarm. My two Boston Terriers were raising a ruckus, and I had to calm them down quickly or face the wrath of our downstairs neighbor. Tripping over a cat who yowled and shot off down the hallway, I fell into the jumbled mess that served as my bedroom and yanked on the nearest clothes I could find, which happened to be a pair of men's plaid pajama bottoms and an oversized t-shirt from my all-region band days. I wasn't expecting company, but in true early 20-something fashion, company could come at any time of the day or night. Living with three other young adults in what most of my relatives considered a very hippie commune existence meant that most friends had very little appreciation for appropriate calling hours. I searched futilely for my glasses and could hear my roommate Amanda speaking in low tones to someone as she passed by my closed door and on down the hall to her bedroom. I picked up a copy of Dante's Divine Comedy and, finding my glasses beneath it, tossed it across my futon bed into the floor. By this time, my frustration at rushing around to dress was beginning to abate, and curiosity was taking its place. Who could be here, and why didn't they stay in the living room? Quickly brushing some powder across my forehead, nose, and chin to cover my freshly washed face, I ran my hands through my partially damp, partially frizzed out hair, and quietly opened my bedroom door, peering down the darkened hallway toward the light pouring from Amanda's open door. I could hear her tinkling laughter and another deep, rich tone which sent off pings in my 22-year-old radar. It's a man. There was a man in Amanda's room, and he had a voice that I didn't recognize. I knew it wasn't my boyfriend who was at work. Curiosity ran electric up my spine and buzzed into my fingertips as I walked softly down the hall and stepped into Amanda's brilliantly lit bedchamber. Hey, Jessica. Amanda grinned her Cheshire Cat grin at me from her bed. She had Lilith, her recently procured green-spotted anaconda, in her hands and was laughing at the reactions of her guest to the unusual pet. Her laughter spiked the sizzling curiosity, and I wanted to see the reactions that were causing her such mirth. Shifting my gaze from my friend and her slithery companion, I laid my eyes on the mystery man. Short salt and pepper hair lifted gracefully toward the ceiling. Covered in black cotton, shoulders that would make Atlas envious spanned the width of the bed. Chiseled features kissed craggy timelines in the perfect meeting of youth and wisdom on his face. Crow's feet graced the edges of ice blue eyes, and I lost myself. I lost my breath, my recognition of time and place, my location in space, my location in my body. An inferno began at my feet and raged, relentless and unmerciful, upward to my face, to the very ends of my fiery red hair. Sound came rushing back, and I realized that I was being spoken to by my bemused roommate. This is Kevin, remember? I told you he helped me pick up Lilith. He wanted to come over and see how she was doing. I licked my now fire-roasted lips and cleared my throat. Hi, Kevin. I'm Jessica. Hi, he said in his mocking, overly energetic tone, and he smiled to let me know that he was teasing. I smiled back shakily, a bit afraid that the blaze inside me may be visible behind my teeth. Muttering something about needing a drink, I backed out of the bedroom and fled back down the hallway toward the kitchen. Under the fluorescent light of the kitchen sink, I scrambled to make sense of what I had just experienced. Of course, I've been strongly attracted to people in my life. I considered myself a serial monogamist. I've loved people and been in love with people. Never had I felt anything as visceral as the holy fire that had just burned through me. Gulping water like I'd been stuck in the desert with Moses, I assessed the flames still licking at the backs of my eyes. I considered the concept of love at first sight, but quickly dismissed the idea. I had felt love, and this was not what I thought of as love. Lust at first sight, perhaps? That must be it. For if anything had ever felt like a sin, this was it. And at that thought, the guilt chimed in. My conscience, that annoying little Jiminy Cricket, peeked his head out and started to rub his noisy legs together. I had a boyfriend. A boyfriend I loved and lived with and planned to marry as soon as our pocketbooks would allow. But I had never felt the flames for him. In his presence, the sinful heat had never worked its way through my torso and coursed down my arms to heat the very air around me. What did this mean for our future? I glanced around at our combined belongings, pots and pans and DVDs and throw blankets, the accoutrement of daily cohabitation that we had gathered over the course of 2 years. My eyes welled as they brushed past the framed photos of my family and his lined up across the bar. My emotions seemed to understand something that my brain hadn't yet caught up to. The conflagration that had burned through my form had burned something else. It had decimated my chosen future with my chosen mate. Knowing that my flight from the bedroom would be cause for serious questioning from my overly observant roommate, I rode the waves of my continuing internal combustion back to her room. The two were feistily reminiscing about their exploits a few years earlier, but my arrival did not go unnoticed. Pale azure eyes blustered into mine, feeding the flames, and I felt the blood vessels of my face reacting, turning me shades of rose hitherto unknown to man. Could he see me burning? I lowered my eyes, feeling, for all my frumpy sleep clothes, naked and exposed, and I dreamily made my way to the foot of the bed. Lilith, the anaconda, was exploring the blankets there, and feeling the heat from my body, headed straight for my legs. She curled up on me like some reptilian lapdog and poked her smooth nose in and out of the folds of my baggy clothing, searching for the warmest place to hide. Amanda and Kevin laughed at this strange snake behavior, and I chuckled along weakly, struggling to avoid those stormy eyes and shut out that rumbling laugh that caused myriad swirling firestorms in my gut. Though my companions may not have known about the roiling inferno contained within me at that moment, the serpent in my lap was quite obviously drawn to that radiant energy. In the presence of this tempestuous man, I had become a miniature sun. I was a supernova, ejecting my previous ideas of love and accepting instead this enormous, filling heat and brightness.
Jessica Horton lives in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and teaches sixth grade math and science at Westside Middle School. She's married to Kevin, who still lights her fire, and they dedicate their time to fostering children for the state. In our final story of the night here at Tales from the South, it's a good thing newlywed love is strong between Kay Fisher and her new husband in We Did What?
It wasn't until we got to the airport in New York City in February of 1963 that my brand new husband, Bob Fisher, handed me a big surprise. We were not going to the Caribbean for our honeymoon after all. We were headed to Europe, to Switzerland to see the Great Matterhorn, to Italy, and on to Paris. I nearly went wild. I had only been outside of Arkansas twice, to Virginia to college, and then to move to New York City. This was to be the trip of a lifetime, and it was. We started our Kay's amazing honeymoon in Zermatt, Switzerland, to ski. Bob had selected a tiny hotel in the village at the base of the Matterhorn, and we were to gaze on its spectacular beauty every night from our balcony. Having been met at our train by a horse-drawn sleigh and driven through the snowy, sleepy town, I knew in my heart that I would never forget this experience. There was just one little problem. I had never even seen a ski. The next morning, we walked over to the ski lift and jumped on for the ride to our starting point. This would be a little more than a cakewalk, I was sure. As it became time to get off, I fell off, face down into the snow. I began to doubt my bravado. Bob picked me up and dusted me off and put my skis on me. My first thought upon looking down was that it would be like jumping off the Empire State Building. But love has a way of making us feel omnipotent. If Bob felt I could do it, I was sure he was right. Who was I to disagree? I aimed my skis downhill and began to gather speed. I suddenly noticed a small group of about 7 men gathered in front of me, taking a breather from the downhill challenge. They were smack in front of me. I had no idea how to turn. Yep, I skied right into them. I was the bowling ball and they were the pins. I got a strike and I flattened the whole group. As we began to try and untangle ourselves, one of the Germans spoke enough English to say, "Young lady, you have no business on this mountain. You need to learn to ski first." Well, you think? I decided to call it a day and told Bob to go right ahead and enjoy the rest of the afternoon and at least get the benefit of what we had paid for 3 days of skiing. I have never felt such happiness as I did when I was able to return to our room with no broken bones and just explore the wonderful little shops in the town. Fortunately for me, the skiing part of our trip was over. It would be free sailing for us all the way to Paris. We then took the overnight train across the Italian Riviera, stopping over in Portofino for several days to take in this world-class view of the sea. The first morning, Bob took me in a cab downtown from the Splendido Hotel, where he presented me with his parents' gift to us, a brand new bird's egg blue VW convertible. Again, I had to pinch myself to be sure it was me. We drove across the Riviera into France and the French Riviera, where I experienced a beach full of topless women for the first time. I had no competition for that experience and had to whack Bob several times on his arm to get his attention. We then began to make our way up to Paris, stopping off for several nights at a lovely little French country inn, complete with chickens, geese, and other farm wildlife just roaming around. We went to our room to unpack, and Bob suddenly said he would like for me to wash his underwear when I washed mine. I asked him if he was crazy. I said I had never even washed mine, so why would I wash his? We continued with this discussion, which quickly developed into our first fight as a married couple. Bob left the room saying he was going to the lobby to find a newspaper in English and would see me at dinner. Guilt began to wash over me. Of course, as this man was my new husband and he was treating me to something unbelievably fantastic. Then I got a brilliant idea. While he was reading the papers downstairs, I hurriedly pulled out all of his underpants, undershirts, and socks and hand washed them in the sink. It took me about 30 minutes. I didn't know where to dry them, so finally I decided to spread them out all over the chairs, the wooden tables, and the luggage racks. I was so proud, and I could imagine his pleasure at seeing my good deed. I joined him in the dining room for dinner, which in France takes about 2 hours for the 7-course meal. After we finished and had obviously made up, we went upstairs with our leftover wine. Upon entering our room, a big smile spread over Bob's face. There before him was a virtual laundromat full of his clothes. He went over and picked up one of his undershirts, holding it up, just to show me he was so pleased. It was dry, all right, but there was a large brown strip of varnish straight across the back. We then picked up each piece, and they were all ruined. We went to bed that night in a gale of laughter. Finally, the day came for the pièce de résistance. We arrived in Paris, the city of light. I was struck dumb by its beauty. Bob had picked a wonderful little hotel right on the Champs-Élysées. We struck out walking over to the Louvre, the world's greatest museum. He had saved the very best for last. As we approached the entrance, he said, "I want you to shut your eyes and don't open them till we're inside, and I say that you can open them, okay?" I did, and I was full of excitement. I could tell we were inside at the foot of some stairs. He said, "Okay, open them." There we were at the foot of the grand staircase made of marble, winding its way up to the second floor. Bob made a huge sweep of his arm, pointing to the landing and saying, "Ta-da!" I looked up, I looked back at him, and I said, "What?" Again, he swept his arm upward to the statue. "Ta-da!" I looked blankly at him, and I said, "Well, what is it? Who is it?" He looked at me in total disgust and said, "Only the most famous sculptor in the world. It's called Winged Victory." What did I know? I thought it was an angel. Finally, it was time to go home. We boarded our Sabena Belgian World Airways flight back to New York City. We had a great flight, ate a good dinner, which airlines served in those days, and were ready to get to take a nap. Our guide then handed us two official-looking cards and instructed us to fill them out and hand them to the man in customs upon arrival in New York City. The first question was easy. "Have you been to Zermatt, Switzerland on this journey?" I said, "Yes," proudly. The rest we filled out quickly and then fell asleep until we landed in JFK. We got our luggage and stood before our agent. He looked at the cards and signaled another agent to take us into a private room. He then said, "While you were in Zermatt, there was an outbreak of typhoid fever of epic proportions. You will need to leave some urine samples with our nurse," which we did. Waiting out the days until the results came back was terribly unnerving for us. Finally, Bob got a call to report to the downtown U.S. Customs office for our results. We were shown into an office, and we looked eagerly into the eyes of our executioner-to-be. He slowly let a big grin spread across his face. "Mr. and Mrs. Fisher, I'm pleased to inform you that you do not have typhoid fever. You're going to have a baby." Nine months and 15 minutes after our wedding in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, we welcomed Robert Martin Fisher Jr. at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York. Today, Rob is 52 years old, the proud father of two teenagers. When I visit them in San Francisco, I love to remind Rob of his auspicious beginning. By the way, he's a great skier.
Kay Fisher was born in Little Rock, grew up in Pine Bluff, and left in 1957 for college. She met her husband in New York City, and they were married 48 years, in spite of moving coast to coast four times. Kay and Bob raised three sons, offering many chances to experience all kinds of love. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers. Thank you to our live audience here at Best Impressions Restaurant in the Arkansas Arts Center. And thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by Temenos Publishing Company and the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops. And our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, Urban Garden Montessori, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. We are open for submissions from Southerners. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
So we're going to play some love songs, too.
It is our Valentine's Day night.
Thank y'all for having us tonight. Mark Simpson over here on the git.
Will you be my eyes when I can no longer see? Will you be my shelter when a storm cloud's following me? Will you wake me up gently? Let me run free. Will you hold me when the night times got its hold on me? Will you be there when the last song sings itself to sleep? That's what I need. That's what I need. And I don't need a keeper or no house built on sand. I don't mind going deeper if there's a soft place to land. I don't mind waiting all night long just to hold your hand. 'Cause I don't mind falling over and over again. Will you be there when the last song sings itself? That's what I
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. And the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at bakerhousenlr.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by Infrared Studio in North Little Rock. More at infraredstudioproductions.com. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern-style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.